You're tuning in to Radio Movies, a special event podcast and collaboration between the Explosion Network, the Pop Culturist, and Dash Culture. Each week, we'll be discussing the films from the Kevin Smith franchise, Viewerskew Universe, our memories with them, why we love them, and preparing ourselves for the upcoming Jay and Silent Bob reboot. My name is Owen Blyton. Joining me from the Pop Culturists, Ryan Betson.
Howdy.
Howdy. And from Dash Culture, Buddy Watson.
Snoochie Boochies.
There we go. Straight into it. I've got to get the there's several episodes of this podcast. You've got at least a handful you can change that up between episodes if you feel like, I guess. Today we're going to be talking about Clerks, the film that started this universe, of course, and also Kevin Smith's career back in 1994. For the sake of the show, we'll be presuming that you have watched the movie, and we will be talking with full spoilers. So, to kick things off, as we'll probably do each and every week, when was the first time you saw Clerks? The first time that I saw it was, I would have been like 16 or 15, I can't actually remember, but it was the last of Kevin Smith's films I actually ended up watching. I got to it last because it is in black and white. I kind of 100% admit that. Like, I was a teenager. The idea of watching this black and white movie to me was like, I don't want to watch something that's in black and white. That sounds old. That sounds weird. That sounds low budget. That sounds horrible. I'm not sure if that's something I actually want to invest the time into watching, to be honest, because that's kind of how I viewed it. Like, I after I watched Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, that's when I kind of discovered these movies. I was like, cool. Start investigating the rest, start watching the rest. And then I was like, well, I'm going to leave the black and white one to last if I like the rest. And it's a life lesson, really. Don't judge a book by its cover, because I ended up laughing quite a lot. And now I would rank it in my higher end of the Viewerskew movies, I guess, which is the life lesson there. But yeah, Buddy, what's your history of Clerks? When's the first time you remember watching it?
Firstly, if current Dylan could get into a time machine, he would go back in time and slap 16-year-old Dylan in the face. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
Because it's black and white, Dylan.
Yeah. It's so funny because these days, if someone makes a movie in black and white these days or anything, I'm just like, well, I don't care, you know, because I'm a movie connoisseur, you know, like a proper movie guy. I don't care about black and white. Yeah. When was the first time you watched it, though?
First time watching this movie, I would say maybe in high school. It could have been, it may have even been after high school. This is, I think, something that I was kind of, hadn't seen, and like went back after kind of watching some Kevin Smith movies. So I can't really pinpoint when it was. It might have even been 2004, year 12 for me.
Even
2005?
Yeah. So that's around, it's funny because I'm thinking, I'm like, that might, like, time-wise, because the age difference, I'm thinking that might end up being like roughly the same time. We were watching it kind of around the same time, but
yeah,
different ages.
Well, Clerks 2 comes out in 2006, so I saw that in cinemas. So I definitely seen, fuck my English is terrible. Definitely seen? I don't know. I don't even know what the correct freaking pronunciation is. But I definitely watched Clerks 1 before that. I just can't really pinpoint on the timeline where it was. Hmm. But no, it definitely wasn't the first Kevin Smith movie that I watched.
No. I doubt it is. The only people whose this would be their first would have been like, would be your movie connoisseurs or whatever, your movie buffs back in the 90s, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I doubt a lot of kids our age back then, like if I was 16 when it originally came out, I wouldn't have probably watched it as well. You know what I mean? Black and white, random small budget indie movie. I'm watching fucking Star Wars or Jurassic Park or whatever else is out then, I guess, if I was around that age. I don't know. Yeah. Ryan, when was the first time you remember watching it?
See, I think mine skews probably around the same as Buddy. Like, I can remember the order that I saw like my first three Kevin Smith movies, at least. So I remember seeing Jay and Silent Bob on VHS at my mate's place. I think it would have been like, what, 11 or something?
11? Jesus.
I remember how old I was. What year did that come out?
2001.
I would have been, if it came out in home release, yeah, it would have been 11. No, wait, I'm on 89. I would have been 12, 13, somewhere around there. Probably 12. So I think I remember being in primary school. But yeah, so I remember watching that when I was like young, being like, this is full of swears and it's full of bright colors. This shit's awesome. And then nothing until Clerks 2 came out on home release. I remember being at the video shop, seeing on the poster on the wall. I'm like, fuck yeah, Clerks 2. I remember Jay and Silent Bob. I'm going to check it out. And that's where, similar to you, Dylan, like that's where it came down to, I'm going to invest everything into these. And I think Clerks may have been later. It wasn't the last one. I think Chasing Amy may be the last one I saw.
Really?
But only because if I remember right, where I grew up, it was hard. For some reason, I couldn't get Chasing Amy at the video store. Like I could get Clerks and Mallrats and all the other ones, no problem, but I couldn't get Chasing Amy. Yes.
Would you say you were Chasing Amy?
I was Chasing Amy. I think Clerks was probably like the second last one that I saw. And I did, look, I'll admit, as similar to Dylan, man, like that black and white made it tough. It took. I think there may have been a couple of starts, and I'm like, oh, I'm just not feeling it. Hmm. But then as I got older, I would, I ended up watching it in full. But as I got older and started doing my fair share of server jobs, I came back to it.
Yeah, which is kind of a good point to go into the second topic I was going to bring up, which is. I rewatched this before we record this, obviously, and I think the last time I watched it was probably 2 years ago-ish, maybe a bit less than that. And every single time I've watched it since I've worked in my current job, which I'm about to hit, I don't even like saying it, which I'm about to hit 8 years in, right? So a very long time. And it feels like a very long time, which is a customer service job. And every time I watch Clerks while I'm working here, I just relate to this movie so much. Like, oh, it's not even that's the exact same job, but there is something very similar about that convenience store setting to where I work, which in a small sort of like petrol station thing, because it's not like a massive store, with heaps of sections or whatever else. It's a fairly tiny building, and the place in which Clerks takes place is a rather tiny little, as it says, convenience store, I guess, in the title. And everything I hear, no matter the amount of times I can hear him say, I'm not even supposed to be here today, I have, without even meaning to, said that to, like, someone at work and then, like, clicked on after the fact. You know, like, some customers come in and being like, you look pretty angry today. I'm like, yeah, well, I got called in on my day off. I'm not even supposed to be. Oh, like, so there's so many things, and just relating to freaking Randall and just wanting to yell at customers and like get snappy at people and whatever else. So, and there's no other movie that kind of relates so well and does the retail, whatever section of job stuff that gets it like this. And that's because obviously Kevin Smith was working this job before he, well, no, not before, while he was making this movie, he was working this job. So it's like written into it. Exactly. It's such a thing that you'll just get and connect with, I guess. Do yous have like similar connections to it or any parts for like previous jobs, buddy?
110%. I've only ever worked in retail. So for me, I think I was in the same job when I was working at the pharmacy for 12 years. And even though I say pharmacy is retail. Like, it's not beat around the bush. You're serving customers, interacting with customers. Mm-hmm. And then for me to kind of be in the current job where I am now, and the role that I was doing before this, at DVD store.
Yeah.
So many of it, so much of it is so relatable.
What the fuck you do that for?
Two reasons. One, I hate it when people can't shut up about the stupid tabloid headlines.
Oh, Jesus.
And two, to prove a point, title does not dictate behavior.
What?
If title dictated my behavior as a clerk serving the public, I wouldn't be allowed to spit water at that guy. But I did. So my point is that people dictate their own behavior. Even though I work in a video store, I choose to go rent movies at Big Choice. Agreed?
You are a danger to both the dead and the living.
Well, that'd be more relatable to, like, there's a section where it cuts to Randall and he's like, all these people coming in like, should I watch this movie? Like, is it any good? Like,
oh, 100%.
Have you seen this movie? Is it out? And it just cuts to like that sign with all the arrows or whatever that's like, it's right here.
That is totally what happens to me. Like, where are the new release sections? I'm like, they're just over here. And then I walk two steps and then I point at this big sign that says new releases.
Yeah.
Or, you know, so many times people come in like, what's a good movie? And I'm like, oh, well, yeah. Where does one fucking start with that question? Or have you seen this? Is this good?
As a side note on that, I hate, so every now and then, like when my grandparents come around or something like that, and because they know I'm like into movies and stuff, like, have you seen any good movies lately, Dylan? And I'll be like, well, yes.
Fine,
like,
you're good.
What do you, yeah, what's your definition? Like, what do you want to, yeah, but yeah, I can't imagine getting asked that all day because it fucking annoys me when my grandparents ask me that little and that.
It's a tough one.
Ryan, do you?
Yeah, so like one of my first jobs was working in like a $2 shop. It was like a Golo was the brand in here in Victoria.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, part of that job was sitting at the front, like set of people that would go stock shelves, and the one person that would just have to stand at the register all day, and you just sit there, want to punch each other in the face, and yeah, and then moving. I think because the longest running job that I've had has been at McDonald's. So Clerks 2 probably has a bigger place in my heart in terms of connectivity. But then when I after Macca's, I worked in Dan Murphy's for a while, and it's just the stupid people, and it's the conversations that they have in those workplaces that are more connected to me. Like, I have had mad long conversations about unnecessary Star Wars shit and just Batman and shit, like just mad conversations, and all because you're just killing time at a poo job.
Mm.
So like the in terms of the discussions that they have, maybe not the job itself, but that is certainly a big thing for me personally.
Mm.
Did you ever bring up, like, did those other people watch, like, know of Clerks or anything like that?
A handful of people, like, at Golo, no. But Dan Murphy's, there was a buddy of mine who was also a big fan too. He was full into the pods, like Tell Him Steve Dave and all that shit too. So we had a big connection there. But regardless, we would just bitch and stuff. See, the problem with like with yourself, Dan, I imagine you work alone a lot of the time.
I have a 15-minute crossover, and then it's just alone for the entire time. Which, I mean, Randall's, both of them, Dante and Randall, are supposed to work alone, I guess, it seems. Supposed to, yeah.
But yeah, because like that's the one of the most relatable things about that movie is that when someone else gets bored and they go, huh, and they just wander over and like, I don't know, here's a random thought that just happened. Bleh.
There is so much of that at my workplace.
Yes.
Yeah. It's almost like ingrained into the culture of where I work. And when I was in DVDs, I had so many of those type of conversations with so many different people from movies. One staff member in particular that used to work there that got transferred to another store, Nate, he's quite well-read, quite well-educated into a lot of different political theories and history and random movies, and had, you know, bookshelves worth of books, and he was quite an intellect and quite stimulating to talk to. But we'd have these just stupid conversations about the most random of shit from movies, or, you know, how would this be, or that person is just totally inappropriate and insane. And it's very similar to a lot of the conversations that are popping up in Clerks.
Yeah, cause like in Clerks, there was the big discussion about the roofer and stuff like that, and the people and the non-stormtroopers that worked in the Death Star. Like, I remember having just that same like level of meticulous discussion. I think Dark Knight Rises had came out at that point, and we had a massive rant about how Bruce Wayne got from giant well in the sand back to Gotham, and then ability to climb a fucking bridge, and like all these different steps that had to take place before he could, yeah. That's unnecessary deep diving into stuff. Is I kind of miss it.
Don't you? Well, surely you do. To a degree, wouldn't you still have similar sorts of conversations ever with?
I do, but a lot of people that I work with, because of what ails them, they tend to fixate in different ways, and they won't. They have difficulties extrapolating outside of their thought line.
Okay.
So where at other job people would you know tangent off like champions and bring it all back. Mm. These guys tend to get stuck on a point.
Couple things in here. I'll move on to the next. I was going to ask like what everyone's favorite moment, line, or like scene or what have you from this is. And the one Ryan mentioned before is my favorite scene from this because I found it so funny and like so smart the first time I ever watched it, which is the Star Wars Death Star conversation, because it's like that is, I haven't had that exact conversation, but I have had weird conversations like that with people, you know, like what if the people who worked on the thing are like really just obscure random stuff where you're just like shit talking with friends and stuff like that. And the idea of them just behind their belly, you know, there must have been,
I bet they brought independent contractors in on that thing. Plumbers, aluminum siders, roofers.
And not just Imperials, is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. In order to get it built quickly and quietly, they'd hire anybody that can do the job. I think the average stormtrooper knows how to install a toilet main. All they know is killing in white uniforms.
The fact that they all have right. this odd person come in and be like, I work in construction. Let me answer. I'll have you and answer your questions. And, you know, we don't get paid too well and all this other stuff. It just like is quite really well written. And like, it's the first example of many throughout Kevin Smith's history of him being able to kind of speak to a certain generation and audience that no, I don't think anyone else before him had. You had other similar directors and writers kind of speaking to more like skater dudes or like, you know, young hip Linklater or whoever you want to pick, speaking to certain sort of audiences, I guess. But Kevin Smith was like the first to address young nerdy kids, I guess, like and have these conversations play out that didn't seem weird or unrelatable. They were fully like relatable, and I still think they are to this day, even though I can tell you these days I give zero fucks who died on a Death Star. They were all bad, you know. They knew what they signed on for, and like that's if you want my opinion on that actual thing, I'm like, if you get a contract, you're like, it is a lot of money to come work on the Death Star, but we all know the Empire's bad. Yeah, but it's a lot of money. Look, you took the risk.
It's something that you've aged with, because when you first hear that, you're like, yeah, why would you work on the Death Star? That seems like a horrible decision, regardless of the money. But as I've gotten older, I'm like, I'm on the side of the contractors. Like, I probably would have taken that money. Like, you know, and I've got a family and I've got things, you know, like it's one of those things. Like, the beauty of that little conversation is how over time it changed, like, I feel anyway, that I've changed my stance on that. And saying that, like with that terms of that discussion, there has been times, you know, back when I used to work at Dan's, where we would be serving customers and sort of talking our garbage across the counter to each other. Yeah, and occasionally some, you know, people similar ages would jump in and get involved. And that's probably one of the greatest feelings of like working in retail is bullshitting and then clients, customers get involved and you're like, yeah, man, cool, cool, cool. You have that moment with them, then they bugger off and you keep going. It's very fun.
Yeah, we get that a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, in your workplace, you would though, and that's kind of what I would be jealous of. Whereas, because I just serve old people or like farmer types, you know, like,
and they're in and out, like they're like beep and they're gone.
Yeah, and they're in and out and whatever else. But yeah, the idea of someone jumping in and like or just picking up on music I'm even listening to in the background doesn't even happen. But yeah, do you have like a good example of that, buddy? Like. Some customer.
Like customers jumping in.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Can't think of anything in particular. But, you know, we might put an album on and all of a sudden, you know, we're listening to it. I haven't heard it before. The other staff member is talking about it and what year it came out. And, you know, it's a couple of years ago. Yeah, it was in between these albums. I'm like, yeah, this is so good. And the customer would overhear it. I'm like, yeah, what is this? So-and-so. And then they'd recognize that it's this artist and you'd have a whole conversation about the discography and what they did and whether they've heard it. And all of a sudden that customer's buying that CD. Same thing happens with, I guess, movies and brings it back, you know, around to your point before, what are some of my favorite moments in the film? Something you said before was the lady buying renting the two VHSs. Yeah, She's like, you know, what are these two? There's not enough reading on the back. They never tell you they're good. And, you know, how he kind of doesn't want to get involved in the decision-making process. There's so much of that when customers will come in like, what's good or what's things? And it's just so hard to approach that without kind of stepping on people's tastes and likes without personally offending them. But then there are other customers that will come in. You'll have like cinephiles and you can talk to them for days like, oh, you've seen this? Yeah, it's a good movie. Oh, you know, the person that wrote that wrote these two films and this is, you know, Wind River was the first one he directed himself. And if you like those kind of things and you might like this, you know, the Fincher film that I recommended for you a couple, you know, a month ago that you hadn't seen, The Game. There are so many times I've come in and, you know, people are like, what's a good thriller? Like, I liked Fincher and that. I'm like, well, you like Fincher. You've seen The Game, right? Like, no. So many times I've sold that,
literally the conversation you had with me recently.
Yeah, that's right. But there'll be so many of those conversations around other things as well that are quite rewarding like that too. But doesn't mean to say I don't get the bad kind of customers that come in also that are just, I wouldn't say tire kickers, but are just like, you know, if our customers have come in this reek of alcohol and drunk or, you know, like, what's this? Or people that are asking you for your opinion and recommendations and then just throwing it in your face. It's like, well, you asked, what do you want me to do?
Don't ask me then, dude. Like, yeah. What's your favorite moment then, Ryan? Or scene or whatever?
For some reason, like, I'm trying to think about moments that I always refer to. One of them is Chooley's Gum. I refer to Chooley's Gum literally yesterday. Because I just love that random guy barging in and having a big old tirade. I think that's great. And just hanging out. And just annihilating any customer that come in. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. the other one I'm a big fan of is Navy SEALs. All the time I'll reference Navy SEALs for no reason. No one will understand it but me. And I giggle. And then that's all I need.
What's the Navy SEALs?
It's when the guy walks in and he's like, ooh, Navy SEAL.
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, they're always like, getting shit movies.
Navy SEALs.
Where are the new releases? New releases.
You know the movie with the guy?
The guy.
I get that so many times. I've got that so many times when working in DVDs. What's that movie with that guy or the movie, the one about the thing? Except in my job, I like the challenge of trying to figure it out.
You're like, okay, we're playing 20 questions. Where do we start?
What do you got? Who is he? What has he been in?
Yeah, exactly.
Who else is in it?
My freaking pop does the thing all the time. He's like, oh, I was watching this movie the other night. And I'm like, yeah. He's like, it was real good. It had that guy in it. I'm like, okay, yeah. Did it look new or old? Like, then I start the game, you know, like you start like, and you're like, okay, was the star old or young? It's like, oh, he's young. Was he white? Like, where we start playing the whole game and working out there. Yeah, my only, the other two things I was going to shout out from favorite moments is obviously as I mentioned before, I'm not even supposed to be here as like a calling sign, I swear, for a certain type of people who have worked in this position. And then the other thing that made me, even when I watched it again a couple of days before recording this or whatever, the salsa shark thing.
Like, that's so
funny. That is so funny because it's literally the type of thing that if you could never seen Clerks, I guarantee people have probably at least thought of that or done that. You know what I mean? Like, it's just such a small moment in the movie, but that's like why the writing, I think, is so good with this movie. It's just like such a small little detail, but it's so good at the same time. Yeah, I love that. Another thing I was going to shout out was the Wookiee song.
Oh my God. Yes. Holy crap. That Wookiee song. I can't praise that Chewbacca. I can't remember who sings it, but that has heavy rotation in my house for like the longest time.
That's such a weird song to have playing in any point of time or history, I think. But
I just love it. It's just so stupid.
It weirds me out. Is my problem with it. It's just, it sounds so freaky. I was trying to look up quickly because I'm like, I couldn't remember who's actually done it. So I was like, I'll look it up on the go here, but it actually weirds me out. Artist is Supernova.
That's right. Yeah.
There you go. So the Chewbacca music song, which is real weird because you would have think like they would have had to get licensing or something. I don't know. Because it is like, it sounds like proper Wookiee stuff, but it's like, does Lucasfilm not own the rights to sounds?
Because it's not quite.
Fair
it's
use,
not,
I guess.
It's similar. It's not exact. It's that weird line. Like, it's not a sample. It's, yeah. See, speaking of the soundtrack though, that's the one thing with Clerks, probably the original Clerks anyway, is the other films in the Viewersk universe, like obviously particularly Clerks 2 is a big one for me, the music here didn't really fit my tastes, where like if I think of Clerks 2, I think of Smashing Pumpkins, 1979, Alanis Morissette's Everything, which is the song that my wife walked into in our wedding because I heard it from Clerks 2 and it meant so much to me.
Really?
Yeah, dead set. So, like with Clerks, the soundtrack isn't quite there for me, and it really bummed me out because, like, after or seeing all the other movies and then coming back, I'm like, ooh.
There's no money for it.
Well, yeah, and I think it comes down to independent artists, you know, and just things we haven't heard. And yeah,
I feel like for all his other movies, like Kevin Smith, I wouldn't say like is obviously like a huge movie buff, and he doesn't like write his movies like Quentin Tarantino, where the music's like written into part of the script.
I remember there being an interview where he literally just picked up stuff that was on his iPod.
Yes. Yeah, so he always, the music that's in his movies is, like, part of him and stuff, but I wouldn't call it integral either. But, yeah, definitely with Clerks, I feel like if he had more money, then we may have got more songs used for added or, like, different scenes and stuff like that. But it's, like, there was simply no money for this movie to ever get licensing.
When it showed, it didn't have any music, did it?
I think the music came later.
And they picked that up after the got picked up by Miramax or whatever. And then they added the music all into it.
Which makes sense, I guess. Oh, you've got a little bit of money now that Miramax has brought in. You can buy some licenses, do what's necessary here. But talking about that, I did want to go over a few funny bits of trivia that always stand out to me about this movie. The first one, of course, is, in case people don't know this, Kevin Smith, when he made this movie, well, the story goes that he was in film school or whatever. It's where he met Scott Mosier, who became his producer on all of these movies. And then he doesn't produce them anymore because Mosier went off and was working on fucking Spider-Man animated series and whatever else it was.
The Grinch and that turkey movie.
Yeah, that turkey movie.
Yeah, I forgot what it's called. That was the first one he sort of did away, his own directorial debut.
Yeah. So he went away, but he helped him many more of this. But then Freebird, that is it, yes. I was like, what is the name of that movie? So we met him in that and he's like, oh, fuck this shit. So they drop out of film school or whatever. And then he sells his comic collection and maxes out X amount of credit cards to make this movie. And to a lot of people, I feel like you could say that is stupid. That is disastrous. That's, completely not a very good decision to make at all. Like, that's the kind of thing your mom or dad or whoever would turn to you and be like, no, do not do that. That is a very bad decision. Never make these sorts of decisions. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that's absolutely true, of course. But also, it's a kind of story that I really love hearing about, where it's like someone just went, you know what? Fuck it. Here's my dream. If this doesn't work out, I'll end up paying this back for the next 10 years of my life, whatever. But I'm going to shoot my shot. I'm going to sell all my shit. I'm going to fucking max out these credit cards. And then I'm not going to go for the rest of my life saying I didn't at least try, because fuck it, I want to do this. And that's why I always love about this story. It was just, you know, it's a guy literally being like, I want to do this thing. And I'm willing to put my non-existent money where my mouth is. Have you want to say and go about it. But yeah, do you feel the same way about that? Or are you like, oh man, he's so crazy. Like, why would you do that? I would never do that. Buddy, how are you like, oh no, Kevin Smith's crazy.
Yeah, personally, I probably wouldn't be making those decisions. If I knew what I knew now and when I was a bit younger, maybe I would have just made a more rash decision like that anyway. But I've always kind of been money conscious. But yeah, I applaud people that have that in them. I never look at people and go, well, that's a stupid move. If they're doing it for the right reasons, whether they succeed or fail, at least like what you're saying is that they went for it. If they're doing it for stupid reasons and other things and blowing money and pissing it up the wall, then yeah, that's just maybe irresponsible. But you know, what he's doing, he's making movies, trying to progress and become a filmmaker, and yeah, it worked out for him. So I applaud people that have that kind of, risk-taking ability in them.
Yeah. I was about to say, you just call it balls or whatever you want.
Balls, yeah.
See, the thing is, I've always, like, up until I got probably my last full-time job, not the one I have now, but the one I had before that, like, I'd always been poor. I was a poor uni student, so, like, I never had any money. So the idea of, like, doing that seemed painful to me. Like, as much as I respect it, I'm like, oh, I would never do it. Never do it. Because, like, it wasn't, and even then I couldn't, because by the time I got a full-time gig, or at least enough money to sustain myself, I'd already moved in with my wife. So it's like, I never had that moment of like, oh, I could do this. I could throw everything into the wind and just do it.
Hmm. I guess.
Respect the shit, like, out of it, though.
In a world where it doesn't work out, he would have just ended up working at that Quick Stop for like X amount of years for the rest of his life and just paying off these credit cards, and that would have been it, you know? He would have just been a guy who had fucking bills for like the rest of his life, which, I mean, fucking, what percentage of America probably has bills for most of their life, you know, people over there anyway. So he would have just been another statistic on the windshield of life, really.
Mm. I know so many people that go overseas and spend $20,000 on a credit card and pay that off over X amount of years.
Oh, that scares the shit out of me.
That scares, so, yeah. I my credit card's only for a couple thousand, and that's solely because if I haven't maxed it out, I'm like, not the end of the world. You know, it's a couple thousand, which is the most I'd ever be willing to like chuck on it. But yeah, anytime I meet someone who's like got 10,000, 20,000, you know, et cetera, credit cards, and they've got them stuff, and I'm like, no, you're mad. You're mad. That's seeing that number to me is absolutely a nightmare. And the idea that he sold his comic book collection or whatever and got like 15 grand or whatever, and then maxed out, I think it's it's like 4 or 5. On a couple of credit cards that were each or whatever. The idea of being like, I just sold all this stuff, which was my life.
Well, it was about $25,000 to make, I think. So this for
These days, if we just I'm not actually good at working out this sort of math, so know what I'm talking about. But let's just say it's like around that much. Then maybe it would be around 40. Let's just double it and say it's like,
yeah, with like inflation, you're probably sitting like 35-40. Yeah.
In fairness, though, now we have better technology to
That's
shoot
true.
Things. Yeah, I reckon it would be iPhone. Cheaper.
Yeah.
I reckon it would be cheaper to make
there,
now.
There is a good argument to be made for that because, and we'll come back to that in a little bit, actually.
What about Soderbergh fucking shooting movies off iPhone 7 or whatever?
Yeah, I was about to say, people literally make fucking, there was that movie Tangerine?
Yeah,
did you ever see that one?
Tangerine
that was filmed, shot on an Italian phone. Yeah, absolutely mad. The other thing that's really interesting to me about this movie is there was an alternative ending
where
Dante is like, Randall leaves the store, does his whole like weird dance out the doorway or whatever. And you can find this on YouTube. I'll link it in the show notes to save you a hot 2 seconds. But he, you know, walks out the store. Dante goes behind the counter. He begins counting up the register or something like that, I think. And then the camera goes outside and it kind of goes to like this first person view, I guess is what you'd call it. It's like following this person in, and then the camera looks up at him, and then Dante says, oh, sorry, we're closed right now, whatever. And then it cuts across and it shows this robber pull out a gun, shoot him dead. And then the camera just stands there in a still shot as you see the person go behind the counter, grab a bunch of money, and then walk out the door. And then it cuts to show him dead behind the counter, just laying there. And it's like, he's dead. And then it cuts to credits. That was the original ending until, I think Miramax, I guess, or someone there told him, like, no, you should change the ending. And then that's when they changed the
slow zoom out. And that slow zoom out is awesomely iconic. I love that. It's a much better ending than the fucking
the new
dead
ending is,
Dante.
The new ending. The ending that we got is a lot better. But I always found the original ending really interesting because I think till this day, and Kevin Smith like vocally always talks about this sort of thing, like his movies, I think, always... he wears his emotions, I guess, on his sleeve a lot, even if you don't think that. It's like, to a lot of people, it's like Kevin Smith movies are fart jokes and whatever, but like, surely they're all just comedies. How much can there be to them? But I'm like, each one kind of represents a period in his life. And as we talk about the rest of the Viewerskew movies, we can kind of point out these things about different stuff that's happening in his life at the time, and you can kind of see what's going on there. But I think this is really important because to me, if I was making a similar movie, if someone was like, you could make for cheap a comedy or whatever set in your job, Dylan, it wouldn't be a comedy. And it would probably end with, to be honest, I'd be like, well, I would have the main character die or something probably too, or fucking, as horrible as it sounds, if I was to make a movie about someone in my job, in my position, I would probably end up making a movie about someone who gets so stressed they fucking end up killing themselves or something. You know, that's where my head would automatically physically go because of the darkness of it. So I always kind of feel like with him having that character die at the end, it kind of represents how he was feeling in that job at the time. You know what I'm trying to say? Yeah. Like,
yeah, down on kind it? Of. I don't like the idea of it though. I think it changes the whole tone of the movie.
It does.
It does. Yeah. But I think it has a point. Like, if he dies at the end of the movie, to me, it's like it's him saying everything that he's gone through on this day, being here on the wrong day, this job. It's like, and you could just get shot like that. So he's like, it's fucking, you know, pointless shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Saying something. Oh, no,
well, I'm sorry. We're closed.
Like, I think there is part of it is just how do you end a movie like this? Because the movie doesn't have a big, long, overarching, there's no real big conflict in the middle. There's nothing to really resolve. It is a day in the life of movie. So, like, how can you end it with some sort of punch? Like, in true any fan of Kevin Smith fashion, there was a window of time where I tried to write my own movie, and it was based around... at the time I was working sort of part-time at a comic book shop in Melbourne. And so I wrote it around that. And as that was one of the killer things was like, how do you end this? Like, what's the resolution here? And for the life of me, I couldn't work it out. So maybe Kev was in that same situation. It was like, how do I end this? Like,
you write fade to black and then credits.
Yeah. But I mean, like, but it's one of those things. Like, if you're like, what's the only movie I ever make, you know, you leave them with something. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, depends how you feel about it, I guess.
Mm. I don't know. I just love the idea that, you know, he wasn't supposed to be there. This day's been kind of fucked up in so many different levels. But then, you know, kind of at the end of the day, he's like, what are you doing tomorrow? Yeah, I'm working tomorrow. What are you doing tomorrow?
Yeah.
All right, I'll see you then. It's kind of like survival of the fittest. And it kind of encapsulates that kind of that experience for that kind of person that's in that job, like what Randall was saying before, that anybody could just walk in here and take our job. You just push a couple of buttons. You think it's so much more important than what it actually is. Actually surviving that and being able to be in a job like that, like for yourself, Dylan, and you're working in retail for the same job for 8 years. I worked in a job for 12 years. I'm almost 4 years at my job now. Like, when it cuts to the chase, our jobs aren't important. And, you know, I guess for that generation, Gen X, and maybe even now, our kind of generation where we fall, you get this kind of like, why am I here? What is my importance? Am I meant for something bigger?
Mm-hmm.
And the very fact that you have that kind of day, or you have that, you're in that kind of environment, and you're able to kind of push through and like, well, reset, see you tomorrow. It's kind of, I like that kind of message that, you know, it's not the job that fucking overran him, or this was the risk of the job, or all that kind of thing. I loved it. It's like, well, all this shit happened, but fuck, I'll be here tomorrow and I'll see you then. Like,
because I think that works in good ways for what you're saying there, buddy. The idea that at the end of the day, it is almost like a soft reset. Regardless of what happened the day before, you come in the next day and you just start from scratch.
And I'm an absolute huge fan of doing that when I get home from work. Yeah. I know my job's not, you know, life-changing or whatever, and I don't need it to be a life-changing. I don't need to be a doctor or a fucking brain surgeon or, you know, an astronaut or some, you know, just whatever else is important, you know, police officer or something like that. I don't need to be one of those, but maybe I do need a little bit more self-actualization in my life where I feel like I'm making some more kind of contribution. So when I get home, I finish work, I totally switch off as soon as step out of work. I'm done. And I see so many other people, I guess including my wife, and she brings work home, and that's just the nature of what she does and a lot of the stresses that it involves. Sometimes I'm like, well, you know what? Even though I'm in this kind of position that I am right now, at least I get to switch off and just do that reset. No matter what happened in that day, maybe I can just switch off and reset tomorrow. And if there's something bugging me at work, I'll sort it out tomorrow or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But who knows? There's two sides to that coin.
Yeah, I take Buddy's side on this one. I agree. That reset is how I've survived many shit jobs.
I was just thinking, like, I'm kind of, because, like, I don't care about my job enough to purposely bring it home and worry about stuff. But like, my job causes me to have anxiety, which I'm not sure if that's the same. Like, I mean, that's a whole different topic, really. But like, for example, the other morning, I just woke up and I was really anxious about going to work. And I try and explain to people, it's like, why? What are you worried about? I'm like, I just like the idea of someone yelling at me today, the idea of like something like that. It was just making me anxious all morning. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not purposely trying to think about it or something, but it's like, I can't help it, I guess. Like, it's just because
I think it really, Clerks specifically really captured that, you know, because regardless of what job you have, there are very particular stresses that come with it. And, you know, granted, in this movie, everything's jacked up to the nine. It's as sort of like Buddy said, like, you know, you switch off at the end of the day, you lose with the anxiety of that job. It's just like, if I remember, like, once again, working at McDonald's, right? Man, like, it's, you realize that it's so unimportant that burger's out in fucking 3 minutes, right? So unimportant. Yet that stress is still there, and it's forever there because it's what that job entails. And the second you leave that job, you're like, what the fuck is all of this? But knowing that you have to go back there tomorrow and you're probably going to get yelled at by some fucking shit mum, you know, because she thinks that you murdered her child because you accidentally put pickles in her burger. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing.
The worst.
And like, yeah, like that. Yeah, no, I totally relate with you, dude. That's spot on. And I think that movie captures that. Like you said, if you think about, let's use, I don't know, fucking Endgame as an example. Like, Endgame, literally the world is fucked and the stakes are as high as they can be. When you think about Clerks, there's stakes there, but it's realistic stakes and it's like tiny. Yeah. But when you're in that job, they're the stakes you have. They're the stresses that you have. And I think it captures that well.
And they're more important because they affect you directly.
Exactly.
Fuck the world.
Yeah.
Before moving off this guy to the last thing, I often think, because I'm not either character, like, but at times I feel like I'm both. Like, there's sometimes where I guess I'm more like worrisome or whatever, but then there are also times where I just fuck customers and like someone say shit to me and I'll be like, and I'll just be a smart ass back or whatever. So that's what I kind of like about Clerks. I'm like, I'm neither character exactly, but at times I feel like I can relate to both, you know. Mm-hmm. I can cherry pick, look, depending on what my mood is and so forth.
Yeah.
Oh, in that case, I'm 100% Dante, like unquestionable. I would toe the line. I would complain the whole way through, sound like such a whiny prick the whole time. That's the part that I related to in that movie. Like, holy crap.
I wish, well, I would probably have less warnings at my work if that was me all the time. But, you know, that's a thing.
I think I'm Dante when it comes to following the rules and not abusing customers and stuff. And definitely I'm Randall when it comes to the most trivial bullshit. and mindless discussions and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
You go. If you got one more thing before we move on.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring up a few quotes that I really liked from the movie. Yeah. First one is, this one's from Randall. This job would be great if it wasn't for the fucking customers.
Oh, man.
I always loved that one.
Yes. I'd wear that on a t-shirt.
Yeah, put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
I'll wear it to work.
Yeah.
And then the other one was from Dante, and I love this. After the customer gets his hand out of the Pringles, and he's like, a little word of advice, my friend. Sometimes you got to let those hard to reach chips go. And I'm just like, it's so philosophical with what he's delivering. Like, what he's telling that guy is like, got nothing to do with the chips at all.
And you know that when he was, Kevin Smith was writing that line, he's like, this is some good shit. Like, this is some philosophical shit. Yeah.
Other really cool stuff I want to bring up before we kind of moved on. I loved that Caitlin was the never ending love interest. Mm. In that, obviously, that's a throwback to the Degrassi character, Caitlin, who Kevin Smith was obsessed with, who was obviously one of my favorite characters in Degrassi that was dating Joey at the time. And it never really worked out between them, even though they're on again, off again for the whole entire run of that show, even in Next Gen. The other thing that I really liked was the Savages line. That seems to be like a through line. Town. Bunch of savages in this town, and it's brought up twice, and it's also used later on in Mallrats as well. Yeah. So it's obviously a familiar term. I'm not sure if that's deliberate of Kevin Smith's vocabulary, or it's because of maybe a regional thing from where it was brought up, and it's used deliberately.
I thought maybe it is regional. or something.
Regional, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then those are probably the two main things that I really wanted to bring up before we moved on.
What the hell are you doing here? I thought you were playing hockey one.
The boss called. Arthur fell out.
Why the shutters closed?
Someone jammed gum in the locks.
Bunch of savages in this town.
So the last kind of question I want to go over before for this episode is about how this movie was made, because Buddy brought up a good point we was discussing during this episode, which is like, would this movie even get made? How would a Kevin Smith exist in this world today? And I was like, well, fuck, you're actually right, because I would like to imagine if a Kevin Smith was coming up these days, I would imagine he's someone that the same way I guess I think about a Tarantino or something. I'm like, well, aren't these people, if they were born younger, they're growing up now, they would probably, I guess, get into making short films on YouTube and stuff like that, and eventually they would have their shot at making a feature film and stuff like that. But where would they try and market it, and who would actually buy up their sorts of films? So it's like, let's just go with Clerks, because then we're getting too far out the ballpark if we don't go with Clerks. But imagine a Kevin Smith is coming up now, makes a movie, not exactly Clerks, but is a more up-to-date version of Clerks, I guess. They shoot it on a fucking iPhone or something. I guess if he was going to invest money these days, like we were saying before, of all those movies they have shot on iPhone, all you need to invest in is like good sound equipment, really. A lighting kit or something like that, but you can shoot on iPhone. Looks good enough, so that's where you're going there. Where would you reckon you would even take a movie like this, and do you think anyone would buy it? Is it heading over to Netflix? Is it heading over to a streaming service? What do you think, buddy?
Netflix is going to pick it up for a 10-episode run of 50-minute episodes. Actually, 13 episodes of 50 minutes. It'll go 3 episodes too long. People will love it, and then it will get canned after season 2, and yep, the internet will go crazy.
See, the thing is, this exists, and it got made in Geelong. There's that TV show, that Ross It On. Yeah.
Like, Ross It On. Yeah. Oh, man. That
happened.
How much more identifiable is that show for where I work?
Yeah. But I mean, like, that, I think that's the situation. It would be a YouTube series and then it'll be picked up. But the issue that I have, and then this could be, this is that butterfly effect shit, right? So without the likes of Kevin Smith or, you know, Richard Linklater, like Slacker and that sort of stuff, or even Tarantino, with the idea of these movies with that level of just unnecessary discourse. Like, whether I think that has shaped where we are now in terms of the content they make. Because, like, things like Clerks, you know, if you think about shows like Workaholics and, like, Always Sunny and, like, shows that have similar-ish in tone, and they all exist because of that back then. So it is almost a chicken versus egg. So if someone was to make that now, a Clerks now, it's in a market that's saturated with that stuff. Almost every show has some sort of unnecessary banter about, you know, what, like Game of Thrones or, you know, some pop culture. Like, pop culture references are so prevalent in everything. Like, if you think about Big Bang Theory, like, it's...
No, I don't want
it. It's like 10% actual science stuff, you know, 60% bad TV show and 30% pop culture references.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so like that show is entirely based on what Kevin Smith has almost brought to the industry.
Except without relatable characters.
That's spot on.
it's weird thinking about, like, you know, back in the day, you think of someone like Fincher, and, you know, he did a lot of music video clips to kind of
get his style, really.
Get his style and find his way, and then kind of earn the trust of getting a script and getting picked up there. What's the model now? Is there someone out there going and shooting their own stuff and doing it the DIY method, like, well, Kevin Smith? Or do you even need to do that now? Can you just pitch things straight to a Netflix or less a HBO, but like a Hulu or an Amazon
Stan
or something like that?
Stan Originals.
You don't really, or even Apple now with their streaming service, they're going to need original content as well. Instead of them kind of before cherry picking the best content that they could get, there's so many other platforms that just need to fill for content now. Like, is it just easier to go that route for people? Or
yeah, well, the one example, I like when you said, is there anyone like coming up like an indie filmmaker that's kind of getting picked up of recent memory? The most recent person I could think of was Gareth Edwards, who did Rogue One, obviously, yeah, and like Godzilla. But before he, the only one movie he'd done before Godzilla was called Monster or Monsters or whatever it was called. And that was a rather really small, as far as small indie movies go these days, really, I guess. But that was a rather small indie movie where they literally just went around with actors and filmed stuff, you know, got told, hey, you can't film here. Yeah, no, Gorilla. We're not filming. Yeah, we're just doing what, Gorilla stuff. And he did that one movie for really cheap, put it together. I can't remember both actors' names that are in it. Fuck, I'm mental blanking on the guy. The guy's the most famous one. But they did that. They were all friends. They made that movie. Small fucking love story movie, basically. And he taught himself special effects, like we would teach ourselves special effects now, YouTube tutorials on how to use After Effects and et cetera. That's how he learned how to do everything. And then after that movie, someone was like, do you want to make Godzilla? Like,
yeah.
That's probably the most recent big jump of someone who was so small and then got picked up. So it's like, I don't know if the idea of all these independent filmmakers like working these days and stuff like that.
Scoot McNary.
Scoot McNary, thank you. Yeah, Scoot McNary from and he was in like Dark Knight, the Batman v Superman and shit like that, which is where people know him from. But yeah, he's the most gorilla example I can think of. But yeah, you're probably right. Like Kevin Smith makes Clerks. Maybe it's an internet series. Maybe someone sees it, says, hey, come make it for Netflix and stuff. Especially if we're talking about now, the year we're recording this in case you're listening years from now, fuck, who knows. But like 2019, this year is like, we already have all these streaming services, Netflix, Amazon, et cetera, all out there. But now is a time when you have like Disney and the Apple thing coming up and who knows what the fuck else. And all these places are actually searching for shit currently. So it's kind of a good time to be a director, producer, writer or whatever, I guess, because places are actively searching for people to make TV shows, original TV shows, original movies for their streaming services. And for all we know, 5 years from now, a lot of these could go bust and there'll be a lot less opportunities again. But at the moment, absolutely, it's a pretty good fucking time, I would say. If you look at what's around.
YouTube and viral sensations, like you look at someone like Cole Bennett, who does all the music videos and now all like kind of rappers kind of come to him, and that's what he can do with all the effects and stuff. That's kind of him made his name. And his company, I guess, with Lyrical Lemonade. But then you also are people trying to go viral. It's harder to go viral with a movie, I guess, than you know, because you have to make it first. I guess you've got other people at A24. It's not like music now. You can go viral on YouTube and all of a sudden you're signing record deals and labels. It's a little bit.
SoundCloud, man. Here's my SoundCloud link and my viral tweet.
Yeah, my viral tweet.
Do you think the ability, like the ease that comes with making it now, is actually a detriment to it? Because think about it, like when Clerks was made, there was, you know, an X amount of budget just to get the equipment. Like that, you had to commit to making it 100%. Where this day and age, people can just sort of throw shit together. And so, do you think this is a better? Back then, there was a way to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Sort of like. The wheat from the chaff is the reference I'm thinking of, but I'm using it incorrectly.
I get what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Like, do you think that would change now? Because people could be like, I'll put this together, and then get halfway through and go, nah.
I think you could say the same for basically nearly all creative industries these days. I could go shoot a movie tomorrow. I could write a book tomorrow. I could start creating a massive digital artwork with a couple hundred dollars on my iPad or whatever, you know what I mean? I could start making a full album using fucking GarageBand. You know, the list of examples obviously go on. The access to easy technology and equipment and stuff we have these days, if you have a up-to-date iPhone or smartphone, between the apps and stuff that you could get for free and or buy, combined with the camera on that thing and maybe just an upgraded microphone for it, you have a fucking movie making studio, equipment, music, whatever you want to do. Like, there's just everything. So I guess there's pluses and negatives to that. It's like, it is really easy for people to get into it, but then at the same time, it's really easy for people who want to get into it for the wrong reasons, I guess. And in the day and age where we're filled with content creators and influencers, you know, people are chasing that one hit wonder for music, movies, photography, whatever. People are always chasing the thing there who may not have ever tried it. If the level of entry required that little bit more effort or money or learning or anything like that. Yeah. How do you feel about that, buddy?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that is not easier to do with all the technology is to come up with the idea and be able to execute it properly, and something that hits. So no matter what comes with the ease of technology and all that stuff, like, oh, that's made easier, coming up with the actual intellectual property and being the creative idea and something that's awesome, yeah, that's still not easier, I guess.
No, yeah, you're right. I reckon you're right there. All right, well, that'll do it for this first episode of Radio Movies. Please be sure to take any trash with you while leaving your area. You can find Buddy Watson over at dashgamer.com on the Dash Culture podcast every fortnight, talking about pop culture, movies, and gaming. And be sure to follow him on Twitter at BuddyWatson12. You can find Ryan Betson over at youtube.com/thepopculturist, talking all things PlayStation on For the Players and wrestling. I don't know how you actually do your thing. Wrestling on The Young and the Wrestlers. And you can follow him on Twitter at HaggardMC. And you can find myself right here on explosionnetwork.com on one of our movie, games, or TV podcasts like Arcade Couch or What Do You Want to Watch. And you can follow me on Twitter at VivaLadil, VivaLadil. Please be sure to review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening, if you can review on that service. Or tweet at Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes and tell them we rock and we're making this podcast, and they should send us a digital copy of the upcoming movie to watch before it's released. That would be great. Thank you very much. We'll see you here next week, where we'll be watching Mallrats. So make sure you do your homework, everyone, and watch that before next week's episode. Snoochie Boochies.
Try the cow tipper.
Dun, dun. Dun 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 dun